His sister is a very famous specialist on Georgian music. But this doesn't mean that what you will be talking about will not be interesting for anybody dealing with philology. You have higher studies in Cambridge, in England, and in Bochum, and he has been the director of very many very important projects in the recent past. One is the E-Aqua project, which dealt with the analysis of historical texts concerning, for example, Greek texts, philosophy, Plato, and similar texts. But I don't want to talk about topics that may be
today.
What you'll be talking about today. So I simply give word on to Gerhard, and I'm happy to listen to you.
Yeah, thank you very much for the kind introduction. I'm very happy to be here. before I start talking about so-called canonical text services and a project called the Billion Words Library, I briefly want to make use of the opportunity to have native Georgian speakers with me. And as Zakaria already mentioned, maybe you are familiar with our Wortschatz, one of the projects we have in Leipzig, where we collect data from more than 230 languages worldwide. One of them is Georgian, and so you actually can look things up here. And then there are some random words displayed here. And I had a search before. Just confirmed that this would be an interesting word. I can't read it. I don't know even what it is. So you see here the sources which we have crawled, so Civil Geo, for example, or Open Text, or Open Text again. And so these are sample sentences that are available on the internet. this word, how do you pronounce it? What does it mean, Zakaria? What does it mean? It seems to be a complicated word, if I understand correctly.
This is just the new word, the word of new time, maybe last 10 years, because it describes the job the lawyers do for people who are not safe from state, for example, and so on. The people who protect, for example, minorities. So just describe the job.
What lawyers do?
Lawyers.
Okay, sort of.
Samarpali, that's
keeping.
Rechtsschutz.
Okay. So, for each term, like Rechtsschutz, you now have all the significant co-occurrent words with that, so there's a measure of statistical significance. deviance from a certain expectation. You might expect that within a vocabulary, all words have the same probability of co-occurring together, which certainly is not the case. So you can actually compute the difference between your hypothesis, called the zero hypothesis, and that what you actually observe in the data. So this number here, 804.49, is the degree of surprise which measures sort of that this word is seen together with this word. And what is this word?
Structures.
Structures. You actually can notice a certain Zipfian distribution in here, so this is almost half of that, etc.
Organ. And the second is the structure.
The structure. Okay. then you also have the left neighbors for that, the right neighbors, and you can actually display the terms that co-occur together. So here we have the word, the bird. And when computing the context, basically what you see is a certain picture of the global context of this word. And many of these terms, again, have their own context. So these are displayed in these sort of two-dimensional space here. So this is, from the automatic calculation, a completely different word meaning than this one or this one up here. Is this true somewhat? Can you?
You mean?
Well, sort of these terms here describe a different meaning, say, from the algorithm. Can you confirm that, or? Well, what does it mean? I mean, this is, I'm in a position like the machine. I don't understand anything.
Investigation cases or spreading Godzilla, as a title.
Ah, okay. And these are legal terms, probably.
Representatives. Yeah. Services.
Services.
Yes.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Mm.
I think like wrong word.
Aha.
Normie would be called. Maybe normed. Normed.
Ah, okay. Are there any mistakes in the data? So from what you have. Which one?
Normie would be the
second one. This one? This one?
Yes.
Ah, okay. Ah, that's interesting. Okay. Should we try another one? I can't actually type things, so because then I need to switch the alphabet. But for example, any of these words interesting? Should we follow one of these links?
Students. Is there
this one?
No.
This? The fourth.
So plural of student.
The what?
Student.
Student. Ah, okay.
Students.
Students. Yeah. So you see students, okay. 284. And different, it's also about open text. We should also have, that's interesting. We have, let me look at more examples because maybe we also have, these are all sources from open text. that explains why we have such a strong bias within the, here's news. News, you.
Open text is a Georgian website which collects journal articles.
Ah, okay.
Throughout the country.
Okay. Samples from that. I see. Okay. Geotimes. Okay. Ah, that's interesting. And then let me
does
see.
Does it reflect in the class of frequency? What is it go there? Class of frequency?
Yeah. This is class 10. That is the most frequent word is 2 to the 10th power more frequent. Yeah?
And we can see that it's not high frequent word.
It's a very low frequent term.
Low frequent, because if the class of frequency is lower, for example, 2 or 3, the word is high frequent.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Right. So we basically measure the frequency of a term in relation to the most frequent terms. That should be something like that. I don't know. Yeah.
How reliably or how robust are these numbers if you
the more the better. the most frequent one is always, so there is a certain consistency of the most frequent ones independently from the size of the corpora. So since our main reference is towards the most frequent term anyway, I think it would be sort of given a certain baseline of coverage, it should be fairly robust. The ranking stays the same. No, the ranking stays the same. Yeah. Yeah. So you're welcome to look at these things and yeah. Any kinds of comments, most welcome. Yeah. So basically, if any one of you wants to sort of be the mentor for Georgian, please contact me. Yeah. We sort of have the idea of sort of mentors for these languages, and then my colleague is publishing a sort of series of books on, for example, Icelandic or in Swahili or whatever. Yeah, so there's a series of further statistics that we can apply, and of course we also need somebody who actually knows the language and can say, well, these are interesting corpora, use these and that. So that's a general remark, which I think is helpful here. Yeah. As to your specific question, these examples here, just the selection, and their frequency depends, of course, on the frequency of the term. Yeah. So if a term like this one has 284 occurrences, there cannot be more than 284 sample sentences. You may say this is a short list, but of course there cannot be more sample sentences because we are just counting the occurrence. Yeah? The corpus itself is not really that big. Yeah, and this is sort of what I also gather from your example. We would have to, we would need guidance from somebody knowledgeable about Georgian saying, well, these are good websites to crawl, these are interesting texts, et cetera, in order to increase the corpus as a whole. Yeah? Yeah.
But it would be possible to use all websites that have the suffix GE for Georgia.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you also have English texts, and I don't know. Mm. But,
we can filter that. Yeah, yeah.
Another thing is the frequency class, which is calculated towards da. Da means N. This is really the most frequent word. I wonder whether it would be good to omit the first 20 or so most frequent words in order only to compare the frequency of other words.
Mm.
Because they always bias everything down.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting point we can discuss, but there's a certain schema behind, of course, and this is related to the statistical nature of corpora, so the Zipf-Jain statistics for corpora, and so think that referring to the most frequent term is a good reference, because whatever text I have...
Everything else will be by 10.
Oh yeah, 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 but it's not so for, well, not so for every language, yeah? Some terms have a higher frequency class. Most of them, at least those that have a very low number of occurrences anyway, yeah? So the Sipfian law makes the prediction that half of the types are terms that only occur once anyway, yeah? So in total, this ranges, so with respect to tokens, not types, this is something like 5 to 10% of a corpus. These are not really very interesting terms, I grant you, yeah.
Just checked, the DA has 341,000
currencies. Yeah.
This is so much bigger than anything else.
Yeah. But yeah, we have to discuss in detail. Maybe we learn something about Georgian language by looking at that, yeah? It's basically just a way of sort of classifying terms within a certain scheme. Yeah. So all the terms of frequency class 10 somehow have a similar frequency and can thus be compared. Sipfian law also makes predictions about the length of terms. Yeah. So this is a good example. One of the Sipfian laws is the shorter the term. Or rather, the other way around, the more frequent a term, the shorter the term. Yeah. So this is sort of a law of least effort. Yeah. So if a term like da will be used very, very often, then the most frequent one should be very short. Yeah. And the less frequent, like this one, then it can be longer. Yeah. And the more content a term has, the longer, yeah? So there are interesting observations about that. This is just to sort of motivate you and get you interested in looking at these things, if you like, and then I may move on. Yes? Yeah, of course, what you hint at is that you need the right corpora, yeah? So this is a particular selection of texts that is available to us. Now, if you say, I want other text, then we would have to think about how to provide this, yeah? So once you have the text, and maybe we can talk about this with yours or Zagaria or whomever. If you have text, you can just send it to us and we sort of add it to the other text, and then you have the kind of references that you are looking for. Yeah? But from us, without knowledge of Georgian or information about what are good sources for Georgian, we just have to stick with what we have in public. But it's a general problem I think we have. Yeah, we need to identify the sources. The rest is a machine that's similar for all kinds of languages. But the crucial part is getting the right sources. Yeah? Okay, then, yeah, advertisement. Okay, so now I want to come to my actual talk. This is in part somewhat more technical, so I thought I'd give you some appetizer first. And so what I want to talk now about is the canonical text services and the billion words library. And I'll explain that in a minute. Again, to start, because we are now talking about digital humanities, I think it's important to think back and sort of be aware of applications of computer science in the past. Yeah, so basically computers have been invented in theory in the 20s and 30s, but the first computers have actually been built during wartime because of scientific applications in optimization and logistics in other areas. And so maybe you know Fortran or other languages that have been designed during that time in order to actually do scientific computation. The idea of databases and business computing originated in the 70s. Most of the still very big companies like SAP, for example, have been founded in the 70s because databases could have been used for customers' databases, products' databases, etc. And while at that time, within a company, you had at least 3-4 different departments with different databases, unifying them was an important breakthrough. Yeah, and for companies like SAP or Oracle, that was their main business idea, and they still live quite well from that. And then in the 80s, we had beginnings of text processing. SGML, the standardized general markup language, was developed. We also had starts in electrical engineering. In the 90s, this is still a big trend. Everything that's analog has been converted to digital media. Yeah. So if you don't know records anymore, but for us, sort of listening to Beatles records has been great, and buying a record, etc. Nowadays, you have the MP3 or CD or whatever. Yeah. So music has been digitized, moving from analog to digital media. The same for pictures. Yeah. There have been different standards for videos, etc. And again, this has been quite a breakthrough, putting analog media for viewing pictures, films, to digital media. And the same happened also for text processing. Yeah, so we had now distributed resources, the HTTP protocol, HTML as a standardized markup language, and XML as a simplified version of SGML. And so with the advent of the internet, much in the world has been changed, of course. Yeah? So up till then, maybe you can't even imagine anymore. Yeah, everybody had his own format, and so there was no way to communicate, to exchange documents. And with these standardized protocols and markups, I can put something on my homepage which you can read, yeah? Which nowadays you think, well, how can it ever be others than that? But at that time, it was quite a breakthrough. Yeah, and so since we are still, I think, in the line of 2000, sort of with internet-based services, knowledge management, semantic web, etc. And I think there's an important lesson to draw from that, because analog processes and media move to digital ones, not just for sound, not just for videos, but also for workflows that we have been used to. Yeah, as yours yesterday presented the libraries, this also is a tremendous treasure of analog media, but we can digitize that and use these digitized media to start new workflows that are not just based on the analog media, like books, but on their digitization. So I think this is important to realize that with the digitization of certain analog media, we are able now to also define completely new workflows that are just based on these digital, like SAP and other companies in the 70s started to revolutionize, yeah, everyday business. So analog workflows start to incorporate these digital aspects, and this opens new possibilities using digital data and algorithms, in particular also for the humanities or languages, libraries, etc. We're always talking about smartphones and electronic business and SAP and Microsoft, etc. But you, as young scientists, you're in the same place. You have to think about your business and how this can be digitized. And if you are successful, I think you can also be very successful. So these standards like the HTTP protocol or markups like HTML, they are what is called enablers in technology. Without those, you cannot do, you cannot move from the analog to the digital. But with them, there are lots of new possibilities that need your innovation and inventiveness to think about new applications. So moving to digital media and processes creates new workflows and applications and enables linking. And I think this is important to understand what we are doing in digital humanities in general. It's a mega trend, and it's not just restricted to applying certain new methods or so, but I think we have to take up the message behind. It's a mega trend. So first I want to talk about the need for a billion word library, which also takes up this general mega trend, I think, and then a particular markup, the canonical text services, implementation options, and then some examples. So from my view, the challenge for digital humanities is that we now have access to a vast number of documents, not just books, also manuscripts, papyri. Joost has presented interesting examples yesterday with the Codex Sinai. Everything that's scanned can be used as input to this. And so in order to record and analyze content, we need to make text accessible by machines. And so if I may put this with a word by my new colleague, Greg Crane, there's a interesting shift towards any level of these documents. Every preserved word or fragment in every edition, like the examples we have seen yesterday, any word or any sign even can be of interest. We are not just interested in sort of reading complete books, but we may also be interested in a certain page in a gospel with strange marks. And this needs to be made accessible. So every preserved word or fragment in every edition, manuscript, inscription, papyrus, is now an object of interest that must possess, and this is important, a unique identifier. Yesterday we have just been looking at the page and said, well, this might be of interest. But sort of in making this a complete digital workflow, we would have to identify each of these objects in a very detailed way. So the general thing is we shift away from documents to words and phrases and sentences and even particular letters. Technologically, this is an interesting challenge, because now we need access to all levels of documents. The metadata, title, chapters, paragraphs, verses, sentences, words, etc., for search, analysis, annotation, or editing. And this is not trivial. Yeah, this sounds easy, but it's really a very hard task. So to incorporate this into an open architecture with the goal of a research infrastructure, this is sort of the main goal, if you like. Yeah, and let's look at an example. These are Shakespeare's sonnets. And what does it mean, access to all levels of documents? This is the general, no, this is the work, Shakespeare's sonnets. It consists of 154 sonnets. Yeah? So we might say these are all parts of Shakespeare's sonnets. And each of these contains sentences. Yeah? So we might say sentence one to sentence five, etc. Each of these sentences themselves contains words. Yeah? This is an example here from of the sonnet 35. And if we are now referencing a sonnet, Shakespeare's sonnet 35, sentence number one, yeah, we are actually referring to this one. Can actually, in the analog, refer to this like here. So we need a link to this sentence one, and this might refer to the actual analog. When we are quoting sentences, yeah, or editions, traditionally we are also quoting things because we are referring back to the analog work. Yeah, there may be different editions of Shakespeare's work. Yeah? This is just one example, but you are actually, when quoting this, you would say, well, look at Shakespeare's sonnets, sentence number one. What has been the London, yeah, so you have to look here, London 8 edition 1609, etc. So this is where you're referring to, and you give a page number. But in the digital media, we might just constrain ourselves to say, well, we are referring to the abstract structure of the work. Yeah, we have the Shakespeare sonnets, sonnet number 35, sentence number one, irrespectively of the actual physical imprint, wherever it occurs. Yeah? So this is an important thing, and one basic idea of these canonical text services, leaving away the analog media. Yeah? We have been talking about analog media for very long. We need an abstract representation of that. And one way might be this. Yeah? So we actually end up with a reference to a sentence which then has a link to the analog here. But the interesting thing about this is that we might also go the other way around. Yeah? So for example, we might find a passage like that, don't know where it is from, and then try to reconstruct the works where it is from. Of course, this should be sentence one from Shakespeare sonnet number one. Yeah? But there might be other passages which we don't know yet. Yeah? So Shakespeare might reuse certain passages in other sonnets which we don't know yet. So once we have this general architecture, we might go both ways. Yeah? One is using these descriptions, the sort of general reference to a particular sentence in order to end up with a piece of text, but we might also go the other way around. Get a piece of text and search for where it has been used. Yeah? This opens up the whole idea of text reuse, citation analysis, etc., etc. Also, this might be of interest to the case you had yesterday. Yeah? So there are certain phrases in old texts frequently, yeah, with reference to our Lord Jesus Christ, so etc. Yeah, in a particular sentence, you might find that. In a particular work, you might find that. But you might also be interested in sort of finding modifications of that in other works. And if you sort of get the complete picture, you can easily imagine that by this we can trace sort of text reuse over different words, over different regions, distributions of this work, different influences that are based on that, etc. So once we have this, it would probably be a very, very powerful tool in order to describe text reuse for long periods. Yeah? So this is just an example, so that you better understand the impact and the idea. Now, we'll sort of look at things in more detail, and I just want to describe the billion words library. The billion words, why is that billion words? Say 100,000, 500,000 books in a library, but if we embrace the idea that sort of each sentence, each word in these documents might be of interest as well, not just the complete book, then of course we have billions of words, billions of tokens that we now need to consider. Yeah? And this is the idea for the name. So what we want to do is to use available standards to address all levels of text and to make use of available research infrastructures such as Clarin, and partners are the University Library in Leipzig, my own department, and a department for visualization. And we have got funding by the ESF. This is the European sort of social funding regions that sort of need economic development, get special ESF fundings. And up till last year, Leipzig was one of these areas. Now we are not anymore, which means we finish this project by the end of this year and have to look for other fundings. Yeah. Usually you say that nothing is more successful than success, but for scientific funding, this is not the case. I mean, once you are successful, they say, well, go away, stand on your own foot. Anyway. So this was a group of so-called young researchers, and a measure which was quite interesting. We had people from the university library, from natural language processing, visualization, etc., doing PhD or some postdocs, and they worked together for more than 1.5 years and very intensely. And yeah, this is like a sprint on scientific projects. Quite okay. So. The technological solution is CTS, and this is a standard that's been developed in the HOMA Multitext project. You can look this up. Main author is Daniel Smith, and you can just look things up there. So the key notion is the so-called unified resource name to identify and retrieve digital representations of text. And as we said before, for each passage of text, we need a unique identifier. Yeah? Up till even individual letters, if we want. If we don't, then we just take what there is, but we might actually sort of go down even further just to sort of look at spellings, look at letters if we want. And these URNs, kind of identifiers, serve to associate objects with each other. Yeah? They help to identify objects and also relate them to others. Quite naturally, as we have seen, a word is a part of a sentence. A word can be part of several sentences. A sentence part of a phrase or a work, but the same sentence can be part of several sentences, of course. Yeah? So basically, these the CTS consists of two parts, the URN scheme that can be used to identify text, passages, and abstractions, and the protocol to find valid URNs and to resolve the text. And it almost has the form, yeah? So the would be a way of avoiding it. And you can actually do lots of interesting things with that. For example, you just can do circle detection on it, work, and then there's a special we have to say, if you try to model the kind of work that you do when you are working with books, yeah, you have people several books on your desk and look things up, etc. Refer to passages and translations, etc. These are some of the innovations. Hence contain two types of information. One is the information, which could have been just a document, as we have seen in the example. And there also could be net information contained by the detector and all the measuring information. And why is this suitable with respect to the repository? Well, because it's persistent. Of course, we need many words to be entitled to this, but assuming this is standard, I think we're very powerful in terms of disciplines, science, linguistics, etc. We don't have otherwise. Remember, a lot of progress in the Google and the Google really depends on the protocol and the behavior. Not so much TDS is important in internet, I guess, just like the databases or protocols and many other things. Sometimes I'm just a big picture remembered. We're actually referring to billions of words, and it's a sizable web-based manuscript protocol, not just libraries, physical libraries, but web-based. It's easy to set up. I think understanding the UTIL is just a different part of the somewhat web. and there are minimal dependencies. I think there are these buzzwords, persistency, scalability, usability. And the state of development right now is that the CPS 5.0 is being released in February this year. Update is coming. We can look at the specifications protocol. Right now, no implementation is fully compliant yet with these specifications. Any data is going to be produced. So, what I want to look now, what I'm evaluate now is the pre-implementation requirements of RDF views and then of this QA implementation process. The evaluation we have carried out is that we need some core functionalities. Not all of these have been realized yet, as you see by the good functionalities for MySQL. The problem here is that you need to describe the structure of the document as a physical and we'll see that in a minute. Yeah. So the number of editions that can be altered in the RDF uses so much memory space with more than that's not really true. The other implementation is based on XML, the dark logic so the source files are stored in the database. CPS interface request and description queries, and then persistency of files and wanted. This implementation right now is in a different structure, but we got an implementation on the March to be evaluated. In general, the editions are quickly loaded and editable, and it's a good performance, but minimum editions is made. And our own implementation is based on MySQL. Article review is a select where you are in life, etc. passage retrieval reduces the free space for every possible passage. Yeah, we get left as suitable, and get the rightest, and get the next free code. Again, this also is quite fast. So, looking at the evaluation, we had a test system with one had comparable data, so artificial data, basically how we have 5,000 editions for the MySQL versus XML version, 100 to 500 editions for the MySQL versus SQL edition, and one edition just contains 500 sentences repeated with random characters, which is, as I said, artificial data. Yeah? So basically, we just want to evaluate how fast, how many milliseconds existed. And the tests were carried out on get capabilities. This is a function with all conditions. Only for the triple store, the get passage work and the get passage span, get passage over 200 pages. This function, get passage span, is difficult for the triple store, so we left that. And then, as I said, the triple store, this is here the RAM that is needed, the megabyte. We ended up with exceeding the memory space with more than 500. So we ended up with something like 400 editions. This is one problem, as we need at least 100,000 or 1 million editions, the memory space restrictions turned out to be severe restrictions, generally. And also, looking at the particular function, get capabilities, which just means, which is the work, we have here time in milliseconds for the get capabilities, and so we have 500 editions, this increases somewhat linearly, and but the triple score always is slower than the MySQL. For the get passage, it also is slower, but so we have similar behavior, not just linearly. I do not know really why between 400 and 500 we have this jump up here. May have something to do with the caching of the system. But often exponential. Anyway, it's right here that it's slower. But the main problem really is the requirement. Now we have different scaling here, so these are 100 milliseconds, but it is longer, but we also have a number of repetitions. We are now disabling the 500, now we have 5,000 repetitions, so that's really much more. And for the same function, get capabilities, you see that the XML implementation is considerably. For the get passage, it's about the same, but again, the XML is slower, and the get passage is long, similarly, but it's continuous, so this makes us confident that we can scale up the number of repeats. So, with respect to that, MySQL-based CTS performs better in every test use case. It's close to fulfilling the CTS specifications. XML database performs good in general. It's comparable to the other, but the length of passage increases response time. So this may be a problem with getting lengthy passages. And consistency and the typical base CSS is not really suitable for the scale of the market. This is one of the interesting things we might discuss, but I think to me this was somewhat surprising because triplification is one of the key approaches in being opened up, and yet at the same time for very specific ones, like sort of doing what's done is, you might say, well, of course, then we use application, right? Because each sort of statement has to be simplified in such a clumsy way, maybe in a better way to do this, but then of course, the other is easier. And right now, so to give you an idea of the billion words with 100,000 editions, we have more than 1 billion words. Sort of one run with all editions and with passage of all editions, then all milliseconds, performance. Again, I think this is encouraging because one thing is to have this idea of a canonical text service and a billion words library. The other thing is how do we get it actually performant so that we can use it in practical work. And I think this sort of gives us some confidence in doing that. So let me give you some examples. Test site for CTS. It's a basic functions with reference data using data from the Perseus archive.org and the Deutsche Six archive. This is included here. For German, this is quite useful. Has been converted to CTS. Similarly, here from data from Perseus to Latin. And for example, we might look at certain passages here. Referencing text, this is not perfect yet. the particular passage that we want is sort of encoded up here, which needs to be more comfortable. But once you have this URN, as we put it using the text, then you will get the text right here. And again, this is the test site. We can test other passages, get passage, get capabilities. So this is the view of all the more than 5,000 editions that we have. And we actually get the texts now for the encoded here in the Deutsche Sex ID, with all the text that are in there, and we know whether it's a transcript, norm, etc., etc., etc. So this basically is an overview of all the git capabilities, the additions that are converted to CTS in the .NET extension. This experiment will have it's open. And, So there are other functions for a particular passage. You might also look here. Get first URN, get later, get previous URN, get next URN, etc. You have to think of the text as we have seen with the example of Shakespeare. It's encoded in a tree. So you just move with these get previous, get next, and then the next, etc. Other is referencing and editing text with URNs. So, for example, we have a particular URN right here that we can reference this to the user interface and the editor that has seen this object here. This is the subject. So you can actually look at the latching text and have various additions here in the paragraphs, subtext, Latin, etc. And then you get this text. This is now in the PPI mode. You can also look at this text in plain text. So we pass the other text to this, with the other character, you get the Latin text. You can then you can then mark a certain text, for example, this one, in camera, and you might say, well, set citation, this is sort of a quote, and you can use this to annotate this, and because we know you're looking at that, or you apply the research that you might have to do, this is Jacobus from etc., and you can actually use this to annotate it, with the knowledge you have, and make it available to others. Export it. So this is the start of the editor we now have in order to mark text and look at things for the citations and export this. Again here, this would be an example in the TEI format. The gray is the unmarked text. This is the one where you say, this is a passage that I have found elsewhere. And so you can actually look at this here right now and so you know that this is the English translation of this translation. Pompeii made use of several options, which are not in the photo. Rondizio. This is, again, you can reference this. And, this is the example of referencing editing text with URNs. So this, it's a user interface and an alpha version of the editor. It displays the hierarchical structure in the PEA of the text and allows the mark text and recognize as a safe test site. So test site for CTS. Also displaying variants, this is interesting. So for the Georgia text ID, for example, this is a different visualization right now. There's text based on one example in which it could be can now trace it to the URN references to these words. These are not of the internal text archive, which have been put to CTS already as part of the prolongation of ePraces. Very useful, probably one of the most useful results of ePraces. And so you now have an, you know, there are two occurrences of, for example, auf, yeah, which is sort of on or upon, and we can actually look at this and find the two occurrences in these data, yeah, with these different words, one is the transliteration, one is the transcript, and we also see that once we have selected this, in this text we have a certain trace, yeah? So, übergibt's auf Begehren der Autor, das bald Gott der Vater unseres etc. Yeah? So, once you click on that, you not only notice where are the actual citations of that word, but also you see sort of the path to alternatives. So this gives you your view on alternative readings in very large amounts of text. Yeah? So this is a modern reading, which is different. Yeah? You see sort of everything that's in red now is a much more modern reading. Yeah? And you can look at these different histories of text and variants, etc. using this editor, which has been made by Stefan Jenicke and his partners of the E-Trace team. And this is interesting for older versions of complete variants, etc. We have applied a similar technique to analyzing the Shakespeare sonnets and their translations. There's in fact been a workshop in Germany because of the foundation of the German Shakespeare Society about 150 years ago, Shakespeare amongst the Germans. And there was the Mainzer Akademie, just a workshop on translations of Shakespeare. And by looking at this, you actually see how certain preferences in time around the last turn of the century or the very first translations always have followed a certain view on how they looked at Shakespeare, yeah, and how these translations have changed. This is very interesting. And so in this case, you just have from the examples here, the Leiden Predigt. I don't know what this means. Funeral speeches, yeah? Words of comfort. This might not be that interesting, but when you are looking at various translations and variants, so this might be a very good way of looking at things. And again, yeah? So you immediately get the UN, etc. And this also gives you an idea of what is possible using CTAs visualization. So, and finally, searching for URLs is interesting because, as I said in the beginning, we are not just looking at the text referenced by a certain URL, reading the URL and then looking at the text. This is the basic function of the journal page. But we can also go the other way around, looking for text, like so to speak, in the starter for page. And now we look where has this text been. So we're using the inverted URL. And just like searches are possible. there are other passages as well where I can find this. So this gives an idea of the reverse search, which then needs to be more intelligent. Basically, you not just need to count the letters that are connected, but the key passage because of this way. So I think that this is how so we need to apply more text and use elements as well and we'll respond. But again, if you think about this, that we looked at the beginning, that we use the reverse index, but this index again can be structured in hierarchical ways. Apply more okay, so basically this gives you an idea of the setup and these are like different pieces in the slides. One important remark first. Citation analysis you can do, of course, also without CTS.
Okay.
Yeah. So CTS is just in the long run, I think, a natural environment where the citation analysis can can be done more easily. But it requires that. All the works that you want to consider for citation need to be marked up in CTS. Yeah, if they are in TEI, it's not so difficult to convert the TEI markup into CTS. This can be done. So this is what we have done for the Deutsches Textarchiv. But These documents have do not have DEI markup or CTS markup, this would be the first step you would have to do. Yeah, convert them into this markup. Again, also this sort of visualization here is one that sort of now uses the URN scheme, the CTS scheme, but it doesn't have to. Yeah, there are also other ways of you could display it in similar ways as well. This is very flexible. Yeah, so assuming you have done citation analysis, basically you need to build up an index on the most cited work and then a text archive of Georgian with clear identifiers, yeah, so something like an inverted file that you know where certain passages appear, and then look up with string matching algorithms or citation matching, which is not that trivial, sort of where certain passages have been reused. And the reuse algorithms themselves at first don't have anything to do with the CTS. CTS is just the representation level. Yeah? But once you have it, I think then you can, of course, display things in an attractive way, looking at things of, well, you can do statistics on that, say certain passages, how frequently have been, how frequently they have been quoted, by whom, in which period of time, and in which area, et cetera, et cetera. but then probably a visualization like a network would be better rather than this sort of more linear representation. Yeah, so so from the example you have given, I think something like the spreading of networks, spreading of quotations within a network probably might be more worthwhile. But we can talk about this in detail. Yeah.
Well, we can do something about it by tomorrow or the day after tomorrow.
Latin Greek,
yeah. Or PHI, which is Packard Humanities Institute,
yes.
Were something like a standard. So now you use them as a URN.
Yeah.
They seem to become a standard. I wonder whether this is really reasonable because the numbers don't tell anything.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
If you want to have an idea what a text is, which you find, the Latin text you have, I've just looked at it, was Seneca.
Mm.
So I would expect to have in the URN the name of the author and at least a short abbreviation of the title. Would that be possible to have two ways of indicating the name or the content of a text?
This is a beta implementation. Yeah. In the long run, I think, as you have seen in the URN specification, the Shakespeare example, I think sort of having the title spelled out is much more readable for a human user, of course. For any URL like this, we can actually define an alias, which resolves it in a full name edition. Yeah, this would not be a problem.
Uh-huh. I think this would be really helpful because otherwise, to look into the text, you may have an idea what it is.
Yeah, yeah,
but
right.
It may be very wrong, and so depending on the length of the passage.
Yeah, no, this is just sort of this needs to be much nicer. But it's just uses these references from Perseus but we should actually sort of say here Seneca translation, English translation, etc.
This is one law: beauty comes last. which is
computational. Form follows function.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
color ring.
Today,
I have one comment.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Could I have a Georgian speaker? I think there are quite a few in the room here for a few minutes to make a short recording, which I can then present in my talk.
Who is the native speaker?
Yes. The others have coffee and she will
yes.
not have
coffee.
Coffee
is outside today.
Okay, thank you again.
Yeah, thank you.